region.
Straight up never happened before.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakulia, Talitin, Homasquia Mustail.
This episode is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.
Hello and welcome back to the Orca Man podcast here on CITR 101.9 FM. Today I got a pretty special show for you. It's an amalgamation of a lot of my favorite clips from the podcast so far. We've had about 10 or 11 podcasts that can be found on CITR's website as well as other platforms. But this is going to be some of my favorite little bits that I've collected throughout the first season of it, and so I'm excited to share all these with you. The first one is from my conversation with Erica Worth. Now, Erica is a marine naturalist down in Monterey Bay, California, but in this particular clip, she talks about her experiences both at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, as well as the polar bear capital of the world here in Canada. So, without further ado, I hope you enjoy. Okay, so did you do any naturalist work? We're just going to jump right into it. Did you do any naturalist work before you went to Monterey?
Yes. So I worked as a naturalist in Washington on Orcas Island for a whale watching company there. I was half kayak guiding and half whale watching. I've worked as like an environmental interpreter, though, for quite a while, which basically is just like an educator, but like at a zoo or aquarium. And so I started when I was like 14, did a lot of that, but like officially became like a whale watching naturalist in 2019.
Okay. Wow. Well, that's also this is going on, what, 2 years now or three? I don't know.
I guess 2019, 2020. I guess like
going
at the end of
the
year will be like 3 years. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. One, commend you for that. That's like a decent amount of time in the system already. Also, two, going from 14 in terms of environmental, even just say education at the whatever levels you were at before. That's a lot. Where were you before you went to Orcas Island for that kind of work?
Before I was in Orcas, I was doing an AmeriCorps program in Arizona because at the time I thought I wanted to work with African animals. And I was like, I'm going to get land experience, but my heart really is at sea. And so that didn't work out so well for me. And here we are. But I got started at the Columbus Zoo when I was 14, volunteering and just like doing very basic education stuff. And when I was like 16, they gave me a scholarship to go study polar bears in Canada. And it was like, then that I realized that this is like what I wanted to do with my life was like something with the environment and like seeing the polar bears in their natural habitat, learning that they were endangered. I was like, this is it. And I've always, just because I started in environmental education, it's always come very naturally to me. So it was always like an easy job to pick up in college. So I was at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium for a bit, and that was probably out of like all the, you know, institutions that I've worked for, I think that one was my favorite. I really like believe in their mission, and they had a lot of really awesome educational programs like that they offer there. So it was pretty amazing. Yeah, so that's pretty much what we've done.
That's good. For the Clearwater Aquarium, when you talk about their mission with that, what do you like about it? Like, if there, what was it specifically that you saw, you were like, oh, this is fantastic.
So their whole thing is rescue, rehabilitation, and release. So, okay. Have you seen the movie Dolphin Tale?
Yeah.
Okay. So Dolphin Tale, it's that dolphin, Winter the Dolphin. So she's the one that had her tail cut off, and she was wrapped in monofilament, and they rescued her over in Cape Canaveral and then brought her over to the Clearwater Marine Aquarium because it was like one of the few places that had space. Cause in Florida, they kind of have a network and they're like, where is the quickest place that we can get this animal? And they sent her there and kind of like built around that. Like they were always like a smaller facility, but she definitely brought a lot of attention to the facility.
Definitely.
And she's the one that's got the prosthetic tail, but they have otters, dolphins, and turtles, and all of the animals that are in their facility are in need of rehabilitation, or if they can't be rehabilitated, they are permanent residents, and Winter is a permanent resident there.
Yeah.
But they have like a sea turtle hospital that you can walk through, and it has like the that glass where it's like you can see through, but the animals can't see you.
Okay.
And I just think that they are very much like on top of their mission of like teaching people about their natural environment, and like they're not shy about talking about the impacts that humans have on wildlife and like inspiring stewardship. And then another thing that they like do too is a lot of times we would have like disabled veterans or other people with disabilities come in, and they would get to like interact with Winter or like watch her do her swimming. So there would be like, there were multiple times at work I would be like in the middle of a task and I'd look over and there's like some kid or some veteran like interacting with this dolphin, having some life-changing experience, and I'm just like crying in the corner. I'm like, oh my God. But like there were some amazing experiences there. Like I remember hearing a story of like a kid that was completely nonverbal and like made some sort of noise or something like that when they interacted with Winter. So like I just think that institution really knows like what it's about and has a very high emphasis on education and like involving people with their issues. Obviously, like, you know, no place is perfect, but I would say that like that is the standard to hold yourself to as a Clearwater Marine Aquarium.
That's a pretty beautiful one too as well. Well, one of the things that you just said there was like with regard to the start of them really like building up their business, so to speak. Is it a nonprofit?
It's a nonprofit, yes.
All right, so then building up the nonprofit, it was based upon the idea of rescue and rehabilitation. Like from what you said right there, it's like once they started with Winter, it was like, oh no, this is a viable nonprofit model that we can actually do and provide a lot of good for. That's an amazing beginning of an organization that I don't think has been done much at all.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely like around, it was like a very small thing in the beginning, and Winter is what made it bigger. Like, because Winter, obviously, like that's a really fascinating story about a dolphin with a prosthetic tail, you know? And I'm trying to think back to like all the details and I can't remember all of them, which I should because I was a tour guide for them. But yeah, I just like, you know, I think it's a great facility. It's definitely a smaller facility, but, you know, I think that overall they do a really good job and it is a really special place to work and to go. And I would highly recommend that anybody who has the opportunity to go do it. And also it's like, if you want to donate to an institution, that would be a great one. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's in Clearwater, Florida. Yeah.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful. All right, so fast forward a little bit, and then you get into Canada, which is where I am currently. Shout out the Great White North. Where did you go for the polar bears? And let's start there. One, where did you go for the polar bears?
So I was 16, and I went to Churchill, Manitoba, Canada. which is the polar bear capital of the world. And it's actually where I saw my first whale. I wasn't expecting to see any whales. We were like walking around this park. We saw like an Arctic fox that was like very curious about us. Mm-hmm. And then we look off over into the Hudson Bay and I see all these little white things popping up out of the water. And I asked the guy, I was like, what is that? And he was like, those are belugas. And I start bawling. It was like hundreds of belugas. And I was like, oh my God. But also we were there. One sees that. Yeah. I was like, we didn't see them very close. Like I literally, it was just like dots from far away, but nonetheless, it was amazing. And then we were like, we were talking to different scientists. It is a program like for teens. And so I met like, I think about 10 other people there. It was like, from different zoos or aquariums, and then like 10 teenagers from zoos or aquariums, and we were called Arctic ambassadors. And basically they taught us about the polar bears and the history of the polar bears and the history of the culture in that area. And we got to interact with some locals and learn about what it's like to live in the polar bear capital of the world, which is cold, of course, but also very interesting, as you might expect.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, like they, so it's kind of like, it's common there for everyone to leave their car doors unlocked and their house doors unlocked, because occasionally like there will be polar bears just in town and you just need to like get into a vehicle or something to get away from them. And there's actually a rule that you can't dress up as a polar bear for Halloween because they don't need any mistakes on if it's a real bear or if it's like something else. Yeah. So pretty crazy.
I also can only imagine like the first person that did that, that something went wrong where they're like, yeah, we can't do this.
anymore. Yeah. No, that's totally fair. Like they actually have a polar bear jail is what they call it too. So it's this facility in town that when the polar bears wander in, they basically, capture them, stick them in this cage. And then like, this sounds really mean, but I promise it makes a lot of sense. And like basically starve them for, not long enough to kill them, of course, but like enough to deter them from wanting to come back to the area. And then they will basically like tranquilize them, put them in a plane or a helicopter, take them off somewhere else. And one of the guys that worked there said that he, cause like, if you give them food, they'll keep coming back. So like, that's a very dangerous idea, which is why they kind of do that starving thing, which like sounds mean, but like it makes
all the sense in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said there was like one time that he had two polar bear cubs. Like there was a mom in one plane and then two polar bear cubs in his little plane. And they started to wake up while he was flying.
Oh God.
And I was like, rip. I feel like a polar bear cub though, like that's definitely less of a threat. Like still for sure. Is a threat. Like that is like extreme danger. Like small baby bear while we're literally flying. Hello.
Still, like there's not a lot of helicopters that are that big that I can imagine they're renting out for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's a whole ordeal up there. Like the polar bears are absolutely a part of everybody's life up there because it has to be. So it's really fascinating. He even had like the guy that was giving us a tour, he had this truck and there was a big dent in the front and it was because a polar bear literally charged his car and like jumped God. On it.
My Lord.
I mean, which like if you're an apex predator and a person is like coming for you, it makes sense. Like it does, you know?
Oh, yeah. Not a question. And also too, like the guy who's driving, depending on whether or not you're on a road or not, like that's, if a polar bear is coming at you, there's only so much you can do. Like you can't really throw yourself into reverse that fast, especially, yeah. I don't know, depending on how fast you're going, whatever. Like that is a maneuver that might hurt you and the bear more.
Right. Almost. Yeah, definitely. So very interesting place for sure.
No, it sounds like it. Also too, it's one of the places that it's interesting because even in Vancouver, I see there's a very distinct, the thing I always tell people when they come and visit it, or even people that I've like seen here for a while, it's like one of my favorite parts about Vancouver, one of the most interesting is that when you look from Kitsilano or Point Grey, a lot of the beaches along this side of Burrard Inlet across to North Vancouver, in North Vancouver, there's a line of suburbia that ends. And beyond that, it's just forest. But even with that, like as much as there's nothing beyond there except for the North Pole,
we as a city don't collectively live within the nature as much as I think we do.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as much in collaboration consciously, at the least. Whereas in some place, like the place you went in Manitoba, you're sitting down and everybody's actively thinking about it every time they enter their car.
Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. Like, you always got to be vigilant, you know, making sure there's not a polar bear around.
It's very, very special problems to have, at the least.
Absolutely.
All right. So after that, you end up, you're like, okay, the sea is the way to go. You finish up high school and then university down with Clearwater, I'm imagining, as well.
I went to Eckerd College in St. Pete, Florida. So it was like, that was like the moment I like remember looking this polar bear in the face, up to our tundra buggy, stretched her paws out, looks at us, and I'm like probably 4 feet from this polar bear.
Oh God.
I'm in a safe place, so it's fine. And I'm just like locked eyes with her, and I was like, this is it. Like, that was the moment that I was like, there's nothing else for me. And it's kind of funny that, like, I think it's, I don't know, in a way symbolic that the polar bear was the first thing that I saw, because I keep, like, I've always teetered on the, I'm a generalist. I love all animals.
Definitely.
I've always been a little bit more drawn to marine life, mm-hmm. but polar bears are technically a marine mammal, but they walk that fine line. And so I just always thought that that was kind of funny, that that was the beginning of it.
So that was the clip with Erica Worth, naturalist out of Monterey Bay, California. It's incredibly interesting to hear people's stories as they get into their career. So Erica as a naturalist, and one of my other guests, Terrence Scarf, who's a master's student currently at the University of British Columbia, had a very roundabout way of entering not only her master's, but her university education. So this next clip is going to be a tale of hers, from how she started drumming in an orchestra to being one of UBC Marine Mammal Research Unit's current master's candidates.
How did you get into, so if you went into applied biology and LFS, like, I'm going to go even further back now, how did you start on that process? Because this is, it seems like it's a long time.
It is. So I actually have a very long road to get to UBC. So okay. I actually graduated high school in 2012.
Okay.
So I graduated in 2012 and I wanted to be a musician. So, So I wanted to go to school for music.
Okay.
But then the summer before college and university was supposed to start, I decided I didn't want to do that anymore.
Okay.
So I ended up going to business school instead.
Yeah.
Very similar, right?
so close, right.
Yeah.
Not a question.
So I went to business school for a couple of years, and it kind of got to a point in business school where I had to pick what major I wanted to do, whether it be like accounting, management, marketing. And that's kind of a point where I took a step back and realized that there wasn't one thing that was drawing me to it. Like, I wasn't passionate about marketing or finances or anything.
Like, the idea of business was cool.
Yeah. And I was kind of, I thought it was like a good general thing to just know in life.
Yeah.
And I thought I could figure it out along the way. But at that point, I realized maybe this isn't the best fit for me right now.
Makes sense.
So I took a year off. I went traveling and worked with a few friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided, and it was kind of one of those things that everyone else knew, but I never clued into.
Yeah.
That I wanted to work with animals. So I decided I wanted to work with animals after my year off.
Mm-hmm.
I'd worked for many different animal organizations since like grade 11.
Yeah.
And I'd always had this big love for animals.
Okay.
So that's when I found the UBC Animal Welfare Program.
All right.
Just by like Googling and looking stuff up. And I decided that I wanted to go there. But I still, at that point, this would have been 2014. I made this decision, I think.
Yeah.
2014, 2015. But when I was in high school, since I was in music and was planning to be a musician, I hadn't taken any of my science courses.
Oh, that's rough.
So I had to go back and upgrade. So I had to do like all of my chemistry, physics, biology, everything. And then I finally applied to UBC and started in UBC in 2016.
Okay. That's a wild story. What music or what was it in music that you were looking to study? Was it a singular instrument or was it something a little bit broader?
Yeah, so I was a drummer, actually. Very nice. Shocking. Yeah. Looking at me, you would not guess that I was used to play the drums.
Oh, that's fantastic, though.
Yeah, so they were a ton of fun, and I wanted to go in to like pursue music as a career. So be a musician, either a music teacher. Musical therapy was a big thing at that time. Mm-hmm. But I ended up playing for a big orchestra in Canada, and that's when I decided that I don't think it was really the fit for me. It was super competitive.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, because I mean, you think musicians, like jobs for musicians, there aren't that many.
No, well, also too, like for those kinds of stuff, I can only imagine like there's only so many and there's like a ton of people that are trying to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was from a really small town and I didn't really get the full grasp of everything until I went and played in this orchestra. And then at that point decided it wasn't for me. It was more of just a side passion kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm impressed genuinely that you like, you were able to pursue it far enough that you got to the, like, I would call it, so to speak, end, because in my head, once you're in an orchestra, you can kind of like, I can grow my network now and have it set up. But you like, that's amazing that you got there and were like, okay, no, we're going to reassess. I give you a lot of props for that, because not a lot of people can make it to that degree of something and then decide to switch.
Yeah. And it was tough because I'd applied to all these music schools and gotten in, and that was kind of my plan. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure my parents loved me when in June I was like, yeah, I don't want to go anymore. I want to do something else. So it was tough because all of the like applications to universities had closed at that point. It was starting in 2 months, and mm-hmm. I decided that I didn't want to go. So I just went to a community college near my hometown and worked my way up from there.
Fair. All right. So you also mentioned the UBC Animal Welfare Program earlier. Is that an academic program, or is it like the Marine Mammal Research Unit, where it's a section of UBC research or something to that degree?
Yeah. So it's within Land and Food System. It's the graduate program there. So so you can go and do a graduate degree at UBC in animal welfare.
Okay. Gotcha. That's fantastic. One of the things that I've like over my couple years, because initially I thought I was going to go into some semblance of research and then found geography and gone from there. But watching what I want to do change over time has been something that's always been interesting, because I've seen some people go straight through. But even looking at the animal welfare program, was there a point where you switched? Because the Marine Mammal Research Unit is not the same explicitly from that.
Yeah. So like I said, I used to work for a bunch of animal organizations like the BCSPCA, and that's kind of, I was very passionate about animal welfare.
Yeah.
And so that's, I went into UBC thinking that that's what I wanted to go into as my field. I'd always had this love of marine mammals. Mm-hmm. Even though I grew up on a lake.
Nice.
No marine mammals.
No, not quite that far.
But I would like come to the Vancouver Aquarium when I visited family here. And I'd always had this love for marine mammals. But as I went through UBC, I was kind of told that it's really hard to get into marine mammal research and anything really. So I kind of had put it on the back burner and was looking at other options. Mm-hmm. And I honestly didn't ever really know what my end dream job was really going through UBC. I just knew it wanted to revolve around animal welfare, animals of some kind.
Yeah.
And hopefully research is what I learned in like third and fourth year when I got to take those research-based classes.
Yeah. Well, then I'm giving you like all of the applause in the world right now, because you're sitting exactly where you should be then.
Yeah, I'm honestly, I feel like I'm the luckiest person to be here. And it's just being in the right place at the right time, meeting the right people.
Also
I got
putting in the
so
right
many
work.
Opportunities.
No, without a doubt. Well, because like there's only, I know I took a bunch of science courses coming up, but it was chemistry in my first year of university that kind of took me off the path of science in particular. And to go back and like finish high school courses in order to get into the science department, it also shows the drive that you'll have to get to a place where you want to be.
Yeah, and it was tough because at that point I would have been like 21, I think. So I was 21 taking high school courses, fun. That's a good word for it. And then when I started at UBC, I was 22. So whereas most people are starting when they're like 17, 18, I was already 22 at the time. So
when you came in, did you go into first year housing or did you immediately try to go somewhere else?
No, so I felt like I was a little too old to go and live in the residences there. I actually had family. I have a lot of family that lives in Vancouver, so I was lucky enough to live with an aunt throughout 3 years of my undergrad, which was very lucky in Vancouver, especially.
Shout out, auntie.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's phenomenal. No, that's more than fair. Where did you end up doing? Did you go back to whatever high school to finish the courses, or was there somewhere else that you
didn't? Yeah, so you can upgrade any high school courses at like colleges. I was living in Kelowna at the time. So I just did my high school sciences usually at night classes at Okanagan College in Kelowna.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's nonprofit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
But other than that, so I was trying to gather a list earlier of, because of all of the times that I brought you to talks, shows, like conventions, that's not the right term at all. I've got a couple.
Go ahead.
Well, the first one that I can remember is Andrew Trice's talk on the Southern Residence. It was at the Science Center or something like that down by Burrard Street.
Yeah. Was that like the Space Center?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what I don't remember is whether or not, like, what year that was. In my head, it was sophomore year, like second year. Like,
that makes sense because the large one in which you presented was definitely in third year.
Yeah. Oh, it had to have been then.
Oh, wait. Yeah. We both lived in Marine. That was second year.
Both lived in Marine. That was exactly it. That's it. That's precisely it.
Yeah. that one, oh my god. So yeah, Fred dragged me to this talk.
It was a talk on the Southern Resident Orcas. That was it.
Yeah,
it was like something simple.
Yeah, and after the talk, there was a kind of like...
like a meet and greet, yeah.
Yeah, like chat, drink, there were drink tickets, there was wine. This is very important to the story. And we were just like walking around, chatting with different people. And at one point we separated and I go to the bar.
Yeah.
And there's this very lovely woman saying, just joking with the bartender, saying like, how dare you be out of wine? And I, of course, butt in and I'm like, how dare they be out of wine? You deserve your wine.
Well, correct.
And then we start chatting. And she like used to be a creative writing professor at UBC. And as I said, I'm also doing creative writing. So we like hit it right off the bat. And then she's like, oh, like how did you enjoy the talk? And I was like, I'm super lovely. Like I came with a friend. Just like here learning. I'm not really like the sciencey person. She's like, me as well. Like my husband, Andrew, who presented. And I'm like, excuse me.
It's like, wait a second. So Andrew was like the keynote speaker of the night. Dr. Trite. Like,
yeah, Andrew, my husband, who presented. And the moment she said that, my brain was like, where is Fred? I'm like, I'm still chatting with her because now I know I have to keep her attention. I need to keep her around me. And I'm chatting with her and like trying to telepathically communicate with this man to show up because I do not see him.
I think I was in my own world, like playing Legos or something with another person. Like, honestly, like this is a science
useless, center. Being useless, yeah. Being useless. And then somebody that we had previously talked with also joined the conversation. And I'm like chatting with both of them, super lovely. And then finally telepathy decided to work and Fred shows up. And I'm like, oh yeah, like this is the friend that I was telling you about. Fred, this is, oh my God, I feel so bad because I don't remember her name.
Mrs. Trites?
This is Mrs. Trites, Andrew's wife. And Fred could not be subtle for the life of him.
Oh no, I have a terrible poker face. Hello, how are you? Like exactly like that. Like I was like, well, what's going on? It was terrible.
And like in my brain, I'm like, man, I've invested too much on this when you break it apart. But finally he got himself his semi together. And luckily, we are chatting, having a super lovely conversation. And eventually Andrew joins us.
Yep.
And then it becomes like Fred and Andrew and me and his wife just chatting. I don't know what Fred and Andrew talked about, but
well, I got to pick his brain. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, and you got like to actually like introduce your face to him, which was super lovely because like now he's a person that like you reach out to for advice and stuff like that.
100%.
And but I'm talking with his wife and she's like, oh, where do you guys live? It's like, oh, we actually live at UBC. She's like, it's so late, like how are you guys getting home? We're busing. She's
of course.
Oh, do you want a ride? Like, do you want me to give you a ride to campus? And I just score. And I just turned to Fred. And I'm like, Fred. This amazing woman.
Of course.
She just offered us a ride to campus. And Fred's like, oh, yeah, of course. No, as I said, negative 100 chill.
Oh, yeah. If it's no problem, like, that would just be lovely. Like, it was...
So they gave us a ride to campus, not to our building, but like I want to say like just right at the front of campus.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Where the bus would have left us off.
Yeah, exactly where the bus would have left us off. And it took like 20 minutes less.
Oh yeah.
At least. And in the car, of course, we're chatting, having like a super lovely conversation, and like Andrew like tells Fred like reach out to me if anything.
Yeah, 100%. It was like just, and it was an actual connection. Like, yeah. Like immediate, like we were friendly enough that he was like, oh, like if I see you around, like let me know, like whatever you need, or not whatever you need, but you know what I mean.
Like support, help, guidance, like the offer was there. Like,
yeah.
Super lovely couple. And then once they dropped us off, they went away. We walked around the corner and then we just die laughing.
we were done. That was it. We were on the floor for 5 minutes. We're on the floor for 5 minutes going, that didn't just happen. Cause I don't think, all right. So even more context to the story, right? So this is second year. This had to have been March in my head. So this was a little bit after I officially started Sonic. So Project Sonic is where this whole podcast, TikTok and otherwise, like, this originally was a much bigger idea, but I was working on that. So like when we went to the talk, which I also didn't have a ticket for, you had a ticket. I like luckily got it. At the end, they were like, I like got there, I think 2 hours early, and they were like, yo, like sit on the side, we'll bring you in.
$5 ticket, so I'm not crying about it.
No, it was okay. I'm pretty sure there was still empty seats even once they let in the people that were waiting, because I think it was like me and three other people.
Bad memory. There were people standing in the back.
Oh my. I was focused. I really not thought about like being inside in a while. I can remember talking with them and then going out, but I didn't really think about the inside.
No,
you're definitely right though. Yeah, standing room only. God damn. Well, either way though, like I had started to learn about who Andrew was a little bit beforehand. I started looking at the work he did. And then even after he talked, which when he was speaking, like I've been looking at this stuff for a long while in terms of the Southern residents and trying to keep up with research or otherwise. So seeing this man who is the head of the Marine Mammal Research Unit at UBC, like go off. The second that I walk over to Cora, I'm like, there's no way you did this. Come on. Like really? Of all the days, of all the people who had to be what's called all the places that were out of wine. That was about the luckiest draw. I think you could have hit it rather.
Yeah, no. And honestly, like it was just being there, like
the right place, right time.
Right place, right time. That was the idiom I was looking for. But yeah, no, like we just died laughing for like a solid 15 minutes before we even attempted.
Spectrograms.
So for the spectrograms, could you explain to me and the audience in general what a spectrogram is?
For sure. So that's really important for us humans because our brains are tuned to look at things and our visual system is one of our dominant systems. Like definitely we have a good auditory system, but our visual system is really primary. For orcas, probably it's the auditory system. So we need to have like some way to cheat as a human to like look at those things, the sounds that the orcas are making. And a spectrogram, it's like complicated math, but it's really simple in practice. Instead of just like one axis of time and then you see like the waveforms, it then tries to figure out, or it uses an algorithm to figure out the frequencies, and it plots the frequencies on the vertical axis and the time on the horizontal. So you see like a picture of what the sounds like when I say like N4 is like woo, it goes woo, and you can really just see it like right directly on the spectrogram. And it's one of the old original ways to analyze sounds, and people looking at speech use them a lot. Like people who analyze speech look at spectrograms. So it's just a way to take things that's just in one dimension and then make another dimension, so it makes a picture that the humans can look at more easily. And it's really critical for orca communication.
Oh no, without a doubt. And like you said, it's cheating in a way. It's a way for us to like, oh, okay, I know what that looks like at the very least. It's reading subtitles at the end of the day, something to that effect.
Yep, totally, exactly. To try to get us to somewhere close to what the orca brain is capable of processing.
Oh yeah, well, and that's a whole other area is what I'll call it, if only, because when I think about, let's say the orcas transmitting sounds to one another, as much as we can see or hear what they're sending, how they receive it, I think is a whole nother thing that I'm not sure if anybody understands or is able to conceptualize yet, but that's a whole other piece of science if I had to guess.
Totally. And I don't want to go on too much of a tangent here, but the spectrogram is just one way to look at the sounds, and maybe isn't the most, like it was easy with math. Like it was something that came up from engineering, but isn't exactly like how our brains are processing it. So when I was down at Google, then we're using these stabilized audio interval grams. And that was like more based on how our neurons actually process the sounds. And if you look at the calls with that, you actually get different kinds of pictures and you're seeing more information. So there's really a lot more that people will be able to do in the future with like turning the orca sounds to different kinds of pictures and 2D and 3D pictures. So we're just like at the beginning with analyzing the orca sounds.
Well, that just makes the archive that much more important in my head then, right? Because if it's all digitized, right, this is exactly why you created it, as far as I read. It was like for the preservation of the audio clips, number one, but then two, they're open for anybody to utilize. So if any computer scientists are out there that's looking to do more visualization, there's a place for it.
Yep, totally. There's more. I'm being contacted more and more actually by computer scientists who are using machine learning and stuff and different ways to analyze the orca sounds. And so, yeah, there's really like, this is such an interesting archive because it goes back so far in time. Oh, yeah. And it contains calls of orcas who are no longer alive. So you can like actually go back in time and look at how the language might have changed. It's really a big project, and we're just like at the very beginning of studying it though.
No, it's fantastic. And I do have to commend you for being a part, like being such an integral part of it as well. Because when I'm looking at like all these, it's like a lot of them are history books. And whenever I start talking to people about orcas, the one thing that I'll continue to say is that the field of just orca research in general, number one, is young. So like it's been around for what, 50 years, 50, 60 years, maybe like inching on 60. But some of the computer science as well, like our capabilities are so small right now compared to anything that is going to come, and everything's going that much faster. It's like there's still a lot of room for new ideas, which I feel like a lot of people aren't fully conceptualizing.
Totally. And for young, smart people, there's just so much out there in the archive with the data, and just like the hard work that Paul and Helen have done. Like I like digitize these and I made like a website, but they're the ones that are like every day recording, yeah, watching for the whales, listening to the whales every day, and like 6 a.m., 5 a.m., turning on the recording. And in January, when it's cold, you can like listen to some of the early recordings and just like how difficult it was. So just like how much work they did. We're just like benefiting from all that dedication.
Once they heard the word orca, my boss immediately calls me down and goes, I know it's you. Like what? Like what? She's like, there's no one else in this building that could rattle children so much so to speak about anything. She's like, you have literally gotten the children to ban plastic straws from the cafeteria, refuse to use plastic utensils. She's like, I know it's you. She's like, there's no other like way, like there's no other human.
So wait, hold up. So this is a little bit different now too. In the school this year, and is this like what have the kids done in terms of that? Because I know you said earlier that like you're like, oh, if you bring plastic stuff in, we're not going to watch the Orca Man today. But changing the school policy is a little bit different.
So I'm very pro zero waste. You're like minimizing our waste as much as possible.
Definitely.
Like I have bamboo utensils, I have a reusable water bottle, I have a reusable coffee cup. Like the kids awesome. Know that I'm very like pro like trying to reduce our waste. And this little boy noticed I was wearing like I had like a bracelet with a turtle on it. Mm-hmm. So I goes, do you like turtles? I was like, yeah, I do, I really like the ocean. And he was like, oh yeah, like I stopped using plastic straws because they're bad for the turtles.
Yeah.
And the kid behind him asked him like how, and that kind of became like the conversation. And I was like, okay, I like where this is going. I was like, yeah, we can't use turtles. Well, everyone knows the picture with like the turtle with the straw on the nose. And I was like, but it goes beyond that, you guys. Like, this is an issue. Like, microplastics exist. They're real. We eat about 4 pounds of them in a year.
Yeah.
All I'm sitting there like, I'm 10. I've eaten 40 pounds of plastic in my life. Like, yeah, imagine me that I'm old. Yeah. I'm older than you guys.
A little bit different.
Yeah, so they were like, and then two of them like went to the principal and they asked her, they were like, do we have to have plastic straws in the cafeteria? I don't like them. And she was like, well, yeah, because of the milk. And this kid goes, but we don't really need them. And the lady was like, you know, our principal's like, well, what do you mean? And she's like, but we really don't need them. They're very, the ones they would give them were very thin and flimsy anyways.
Sure.
So then our kids like as a collective whole wrote to the county, and the county as a collective whole, which I'm very proud of them, stopped using plastic straws.
The county?
Yeah, like they took it so far as to tell their older siblings and their friends, and a bunch of kids were writing to the county. It just became a countywide movement, and the whole county stopped using plastic straws.
All because you wore a bracelet.
Right. I don't know if that was like the sole reason, but like took part in like, I know we were one of the schools that reached out to the county, and the county was impressed because they were so young and so like eloquently written in their research. Like the kids were like, no, because you know, the oceans and the turtles. And this one kid actually wrote about microplastics.
Yeah.
Because I had talked to him about it, and he like went home and like looked up what they were, and he like even wrote in his letter to the county, to the district, like, you know, they're in our soil. So like even as we consume vegetables, like they're there.
Yeah.
And it just, it made me so proud. All because I wore a bracelet with a turtle on it, which I wear all the time. It's the smallest things that you don't even think that they notice.
Yeah.
That they really do, and they'll ask you questions.
Not only that, but like I think the most fascinating part of that entire saga for me is the kid behind him who asked how.
Yeah.
He's like, oh no, the like plastic straws is bad for the turtles. He's like, wait, how does that work? Because that, like, thinking on that kind of level critically as a fifth grader, that's something that like I didn't get until mid to late high school, even personally. Like understanding the full like supply chain where it goes after waste and things like that, and like understanding that it's a totality, like. That's fantastic to see that that's the interest.
I love and hate the internet at the same time, because I know he didn't come to that conclusion on his own.
Yeah.
I know he had to have seen it via TikTok or Instagram, or all of them are like on literally most social media platforms. So like I know he saw it somewhere.
Of course.
And I'm assuming he took interest in, or he felt bad for the turtles or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then he kind of like, because he knew a little bit about what I was talking about with microplastics.
Yeah. He was able to like keep up at least with the conversation.
Yeah, like he understood what I was trying to say, and he like kind of described it to the kid behind him in a way that a 10-year-old would be able to understand it.
That's
great, because I was like, this kid is going places in the future.
He is. And that's also one of the biggest things that I'm trying to wrap my head around the more that I like actively enter the field of orcas and marine science and the rest is like, people talk about conservation in very weird ways. And a lot of the big, big conservation that happens is very like, write to your senators, write to your congressmen, write to like write or like act in certain ways and like reduce your own personal waste. But the social aspect is not as heavily tapped into as it could be. Like the kids in the county focusing on the schools probably did more than 20 people or like a group of adults that would try to gather together and talk to it. If only because the kids are the ones that are being immediately affected and like within the school system.
Yeah, I think that's really why the county paid attention, because I think the kids, I know it was our school and a bunch of like our whole feeder pattern.
Yeah.
So feeder patterns here in our district are made up of those three high schools. So you have about 9 schools, because most of us know each other. So we were all texting each other, hey, you know, our kids are writing to the county about plastic straws.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, let me ask my kids their opinion. And it became like our feeder pattern did it, and I know a couple other feeder patterns did it. So you have like 20 something schools writing to the county, begging them to stop using plastic straws. And we're the largest county in the country, like the largest school district in the country.
That's insane.
Kids are begging the county to be like, stop. Like, we're a huge county as it is.
Yeah.
Have millions of students using plastic every day.
And that's one way to, and it, I hope that they understand the like breadth of impact that that has, because that not only affects them, that affects every iteration of classes that comes after them too.
Yeah.
Like that's, there are lobbied politicians that can't do that stuff. Like there are people that like, that's their entire job and they can't get the job done.
I think it's just because they're kids, and I think they showed such an adamant interest in all of this.
Yeah.
That it really made an impact. Cause I think like, even my boss like stepped back and was like, these kids really care. I'm like, yeah. Cause I talk to them and they actually like enjoy like what I have to say. I explained to her that there was a TikTok page, like, that you are who you are.
Yeah.
She was like, that's so strange that the kids, and I was like, leave it be. Like,
it's outside of the classroom. And when it is in the
suite. I was like, what they find on TikTok is at home. I was like, if they come in to show me the next day, it's different.
Yeah. No, it's not immediate from there. That's crazy. All right, so they've banned plastic straws. So you also mentioned that each classroom next year is going to have an orca adoption, if I'm right. If I hear that right?
Yes, because it became such a phenomenon and all my coworkers were asking me, like, what, like, how did you manage to get the kids so interested in something? I was like, honestly, it started with one little girl seeing a TikTok, showing me the TikTok, and then her friends becoming interested in who this person was and what he does. And, you know, I was like, they're actually interested in it. It's something that is a fun activity, because I know the classroom pack comes with, like, worksheets and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
I was like, you know, after testing, it's like a good, even before, we could do it as like a whole year activity, you know, and you can, as a side activity, because they're, even kindergartners were like interested in like orcas and what they were.
Just in general, as like an animal.
Yeah, they were it's big. It's huge. That's insane. Think the biggest shocker to kinder was that the white patch is not an eye.
Oh yeah, because that's a wild concept even to me now.
What? They were like, that's not their eye. I was like, no, that's not their eye. And then even one of the ladies that works with me, she literally came up to me and she was like, I had no idea that orcas were like this. And I was, you know, the kids were talking about dorsal fins and how big they really are.
Yeah.
And like how big orcas actually are. And she came up to me, she goes, you know, I've been to this aquarium almost once a year for Lolita's entire captivity. And I have not once, like, realized how big she actually is.
Yeah. It takes a lot. Sometimes it takes kids or a village. Also, too, you have, one of the best, I'll call it, marine bio followings that I've seen on TikTok. When did you start?
I think I started in 2019, when my lab I caught an octopus for our lab, and so I started posting videos of her because she was funny, and those, like, I got like 40,000 views on a couple of them, and I was like, wow, I'm hot shit. And then I did not post for a long time after that. I just post for fun, where I was just like, oh, my cute kitten, look how cute he is. Oh, I went to like Washington and got engaged and like posted that last summer. And then I started like posting more regularly probably in July of 2020.
Okay.
Or August, while I was in quarantine in Hawaii. And then it just was like, I know a lot of people want to do this field, so I'm just gonna start posting stuff about it and answering questions, because there's a lot of things that are misunderstood about the field.
Fair.
Or people are really intimidated, or their parents say it's horrible, whatever, that just trying to dispel. And be, and part of it too is everyone's like, there's no jobs, you don't get a job after graduating, and I'm like, there's no major that guarantees you a job day after graduation. It's all on you. I mean, my husband's an accountant, and he struggled, and like accounting is, I feel like, one of those majors people are like, oh, there's so many jobs.
You're fine.
Yeah. But it's like, it matters what you do. And the part of it is, a lot of people just go to school and get their degree. And so I wanted to share, you need to be proactive the whole time. And that's how you get into this field. It isn't just your degree. And that's a lot of the problem. That's the mentality, because a lot of other degrees kind of work that way. It's your grades that really set you apart. You don't need to maybe have a ton of relative experience in terms of a job or internship. Definitely. They're always encouraged, I think, in every field, but I know a ton of people that never did an internship in their major and had a job pretty easily. And so I was like, that's not the case for this for STEM, and especially for environmental science.
Oh, without a doubt.
Badly, but just to encourage that and bring more attention to it, so people can get into this field, but with a realistic idea of what to do.
More than fair. I think the realistic is the biggest thing. It's one of the most romanticized, I'll call it, degrees that I've seen.
Well, and I definitely played my part in that. I'm also a free diver.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my stuff is from my free time. Like, most of my underwater videos are from free time.
Yeah.
I I dove like every week, sometimes multiple times a week. And I also was like, oh, look at this animal. And I'd pick it up and make it into something marine sciencey, but it wasn't for my job, which people were like, your job's amazing. And I'm like, this is not my job. It's a part of my life. And like, it applies to what I do, but it is not my job. I'm not paid generally to go diving. There were a few times I was to film stuff for online COVID school, where we would go out and film labs. Me and my coworker and my professor, we'd go film a lab and then put it online for students to feel like they were there. So I was paid my last semester I was in to go out in the field, but like once a month. And it wasn't always fun. Like we woke up at like 3 a.m. one morning just so we could hit low tide. And
so
my professor almost drove us off the road. And we like legit were like, okay, we almost like died right then. And then we got egg burritos and it was fine.
There you go. That's a nice little tip at the end of it.
Yeah, but I was like, it's not, even then, like, it was fun, but I came home, and that was one of the days I posted, I think, my first video that got a million views. I literally came home, sick. I was like, oh, I told people I'd make, like, a field work day video, so I made a field work day video, and then I made one that was like, welcome to marine biology TikTok, and it was, like, all aesthetic stuff, and then I took a nap for, like, 2 hours, and I woke up, and I had, like, 40,000 new followers, and the video had, I don't even know how many views, and I was like, what happened? I literally spent 2 minutes, and the video that I spent, like, I want to say 30 minutes making, which was my field day video.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I woke up at 3 a.m., we drove in the car, you know, like, a day in my life. That one had, like, 1,000 views, and I was like, are you kidding? The one I threw together got, that's always how it works too, but I was just like,
it's that's like the crux of TikTok.
Yeah, so I was like, cool, awesome. And that's when I think I hit 100k from that video.
Nice.
And I was like, wow, thank you.
It's like, I'll take that.
Okay,
no, more than fair. I can remember in the beginning when I first started, because I started in like January. And I spent, for the first like 10 or so videos, each one took me 2 hours at least. Because I was like, I'm going to think through it. I'm going to try all these things.
Yeah.
And then there was one day where I was like,
think through platform.
No, it's not. I was lying in bed one day and I was like, I was spewing off whatever thought I had. And that one was the one that ended up doing well. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's very finicky. And that's where I'm like, I'm not even going to like try and make. I make some videos that I'm like, oh, this has thought into it. But then I'm like, whatever. I know that video is going to get like, obviously it'll hopefully hit my core audience that are there for information. But a lot of people are just 100%. Like, pretty video, follow. And then I'll lose followers and they're like, oh, never mind.
You're not just pretty videos?
Yeah, so I'm not. I am no longer in Hawaii and I haven't dove for months. So I don't have new footage to show people.
Well, that's the thing about the app too, though, is like I've found is like reposting is an easy thing. And then more than that too, like it, I don't know, it will take what you throw at it at the end of the day.
I've had some people comment, be like, you shouldn't post so many of those welcome to marine bio TikTok videos. And I'm like, that's how I get followers, people. They're going to be here. I'm still going to do them. Of course. They're annoying because I do them like, I've actually slowed down just because there haven't been good audios to do them to. Fair. But I'm like, that's what gets people here. And sorry, that's part of my mojo is getting people here and then getting them to stay.
No, there's a duality to it. I remember like there was one that I posted recently. It was a Harry Potter one. I saw the video of the dude who put a sword in his hair and like kept it up as a bun. And that one was for shits. That one was like, it was 10 o'clock at night. And I was like, oh, I can put my hair up into a wand. This will work. Yeah. And it did. And then it was the same kind of thing. I fell asleep and I woke up. I was like, really? It's like of all the ones.
Yeah.
And it was like a crap quality too.
Well, that was the shark exposing one.
Yeah.
Both of them I just made thinking like no one would see them. Mm-hmm. For the one where I was laughing at the one female influencer we were talking about, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is just funny. And I know this, like I also work in digital marketing. And so I know this picture.
Of course.